Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. As Cure gears up for its very first patient-focused meeting, held in conjunction with this year's Miami Breast Cancer Conference on March 9th, we invited meeting faculty members Dr. Patrick Borgen and patient advocate Stephanie Saban into our studios here in New Jersey. The pair discussed their journey as patient and doctor, and also why they are looking forward to helping to educate patients and their loved ones on the everyday issues they face following a cancer diagnosis.
Hello, my name is Pat Borgen. I'm the chairman of the Department of Surgery at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn, New York, and I founded the Brooklyn Breast Cancer Project. I'm here with my dear friend and patient. I'll let her introduce herself.
My name is Stephanie Saban. I am an 8-year metastatic breast cancer thriver. I have been thriving with stage 4 cancer for nearly 8 years, and Dr. Borgen is the man who saved my life. He's my doctor and friend as well.
Thank you for that, and thank you. I have to start by asking you, how are you today?
It's kind of a loaded question because I've been through so much, obviously, that if I were to answer today, I'm amazing. I'm doing well. I am thriving. I'm living my life like any other quote-unquote normal person. If anything, I'm doing more than the average person because you have a new perspective when you go through something like I've been through. So I'm doing great. I'm still on, you know, a full-blown treatment course. I still do my monthly doctor visits and routines, but my mindset is well. I feel very healthy.
For our audience, go back to that time 8 years ago and you learned that you had metastatic breast cancer. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It does seem very surreal. But I was 31 years old when I was diagnosed, and I would say I was kind of at the height of my career. I was teaching, and I was doing really well at what I was doing, and I was loving what I was doing. And then just out of nowhere, you know, I got this lump in my chest, went to get it checked out, thinking there's no chance in the hell I had cancer. It didn't run in my family. Long story short, it turned out to not only be cancer, but it had already metastasized to my bone. So it went from a stage 2 diagnosis from my initial consultation to stage 4. And when you hear the word cancer, I think, I was guilty of it. Obviously, then you just automatically associate that word with death and dying. So I thought, oh my God, I'm going to die at 31 years old. This is my last everything this year. And when you hear stage 4 and you start Googling, you know, it's pretty frightening. So my whole world got totally flipped upside down. I had to quit my career that day, and I haven't gone back since. And I was kind of just thrown into this world of cancer, and it was kind of like sink or swim. And being a teacher, I love to research, and I'm very involved. I was very involved in the decision-making, what I was going to do, what was right for me, for mm-hmm. my health. So I took it upon myself to do a ton of research and find my way out of this darkness, you know. And like I said at the beginning, I thought this was my last everything.
What did the doctors say? What was the message from your oncologists 8 years ago about prognosis or what to expect, or were they hopeful? Were they not hopeful? Tell me about that experience.
The initial consensus was 1 in 5 women with my diagnosis would live to see 5 years. I had a 15% chance to survive. And they would keep me alive as long as they could with the drugs that were available. So obviously, given these statistics, I was terrified.
Devastated,
terrified. I felt like my life was over, essentially over, and I had very little hope, very, very little to cling on to.
So the initial profile of the cells that went from the breast to the bone was what, in terms of ERPR and HER2?
So the pathology that came back from my initial lumpectomy, I was ER positive, HER2 positive, and hormone-driven cancer. So after I found out that prognosis, I moved to New York to go to a very prestigious cancer hospital institution. And when I arrived to this hospital, I started treatment specific to that diagnosis. I was on, I believe I started on Navalbine, I was doing tamoxifen, and then I started, because of the HER2, I was put on Herceptin. And I was on this regimen for a few years, and when I get scanned, everything was kind of stable, I would say. I was told I was incurable, so these scans would kind of show the same, you know, little bone progression here, little regression here, there's something on my spine showing. And about 4 years, maybe 3.5 years into this kind of regimen protocol, the mass in my chest started to come back really aggressively. This time it was inflammatory. So it was protruding through my skin. It was oozing. It was really aggressive and really scary. So at that time, I believe it's Perjeta, piggybacks with the Herceptin.
Right. Pertuzumab had been approved as a companion drug to trastuzumab or Herceptin.
Yes. So I was then put on that as an extra dart to throw at it. It wasn't doing anything. So then I was to go on a CMF, I believe, chemo called CMF. And so I was put on all these new drugs that were specific to this diagnosis, but nothing was working.
You got the whole range of HER2-targeted therapy.
Yes.
In addition to CMF, which is a cytotoxic chemotherapy, and in addition to tamoxifen, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator. So we're blocking estrogen, and we're using chemo,
right,
and we're blocking HER2.
I believe around this time, too, I wasn't tolerating tamoxifen that well, so I was put on Lupron. So I've been on Lupron for a while, and I'm also currently still taking
aromatase inhibitor.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
So I was taking all of these drugs that were specific to HER2, and they weren't working. And my oncologist was telling me, the drugs aren't working. There's really nothing we can do. So I, you know, again, like thinking, okay, this is it. But something within me, I knew something was wrong. And I knew something was wrong for quite some time.
Right.
And now I know that was my intuition and it's God and it was so right on. But in that moment, I just knew something was wrong, but I had no idea what. So long story short, I did some research, called a friend, and she put me in touch with a Chinese herbalist, Dr. George Wong, who actually used to work at Sloan. And I met with him, and one of the first things he told me after going over everything that I was experiencing and going through, said, you have to find Dr. Patrick Borgen at my Mamadi's in Brooklyn. And I saw him a few times, and every time I saw him, he'd tell me the same thing. So I was like, you know what? I have to find this man. So I didn't tell anybody in my family except for my mom, because everyone would think I was a total lunatic leaving the best cancer center in the world to go against what they're telling me. But at that time, they were giving up hope on me, so why would I stay there? Mm-hmm. So I called my mom and I said, I want to go find this Dr. Patrick Borgen in Brooklyn. And she got on the next flight, flew in, and came with me. And we showed up at your office.
Right.
And when I showed up to your office, you obviously saw the tremendous mass growing in my chest. And I was just like a deer in headlights, scared as could be, as sick as could be. And here I had one woman basically telling me there's nothing we could do for you. And I'll never forget you looking at me that day and telling me that 10,000% I was going to beat this. And I always get choked up no matter how many times I tell
this story.
Good
at math, so this whole 10,000% thing probably is not great. But, I thought there were some stones that were left unturned.
Right.
I had worked with George Wong for many, many, many years. And with your type of breast cancer, what we thought you had then, certainly estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, I'd seen traditional Chinese medicines be effective. And so I didn't think we were at even close to the end of our of our road. I didn't see it.
And you suggested, you asked me, has this been biopsied before? And I said, no, it hasn't. And then you explained to me, well, perhaps the cancer's changed. Sometimes when a tumor comes back, it could be a whole different type of cancer. And my head was spinning because I'm like, I'm not an oncologist. I'm like, so your cancer can change. And you suggested that I go back and ask her to give me the biopsy, which I did. And she said there was no need for that. So I kept seeing you before I'd go see her every appointment. And the advice you were giving me was totally like night and day with what she was telling me to do. And everything you said really resonated with me and my spirit. So I decided to, I remember you told me one morning, or one appointment, be in my office tomorrow morning, I want to biopsy that. So at this point I was like, I had full trust in you. I showed up to your office, biopsied me, and I believe it was about a week later you sent me a message saying, I have informed your oncologist, and now I'm informing you that the reason you're not responding to these treatments is because your HER2
was negative.
Yeah. It was never HER2 positive.
Yeah.
And then after that, I had to make a big decision. You know, you said, where do you want to be? Do you want to be in New York? Do you want to go back home to Los Angeles? And at that time, I was really sick. I figured, let me get home. You put me in touch with, you gave me a list of some oncologists to get a hold of. And I found my new oncologist at that time at UCLA.
Yep.
And he's amazing, and he actually went back and did a FISH test, where they went back and they, I didn't even know that they keep your initial tumor, so they took my original tumor, they keep it in wax, took a slice of that, sent it off to some master pathologist, and it came back that the cancer hadn't changed, it was actually HER2 negative from day one, and very much so. He said it's a very small scale, it was very much HER2 negative, so whoever read me my pathology reports was off that morning, but that definitely affected the rest of my life.
Yeah. And a new class of drugs had just been studied and approved,
yes,
which we thought were perfect,
right,
for you.
Yes.
And that's where we went.
Yeah.
Wow. It's quite a story.
Yeah.
And but there are a lot of messages, you know, about what we as doctors can do. Doctors do a bad job of predicting the future. We
right.
just do. I also think we have a responsibility about maintaining hope.
Right. Absolutely.
When you first got your diagnosis, palbociclib had just entered some preliminary trials, and the timing of the unblinding of those trials was perfect for you. And how many more drugs are out there today at that point like palbociclib? So what are the most important things that you learned along this journey? Can you sort of go through those?
Sure. On a personal level or from like a doctor's or like what I could...
Whatever you're comfortable talking
sure.
about.
Sure. So on a personal level, I've learned that to take nothing for granted. Every day is such a beautiful gift. I see the beauty in everything. You know, people tend to overlook things and we get very caught in our boxes. And instead of realizing like, oh, it's a gift to wake up today. You know what? I hear so many people complain about going to work. I'm like, you get to go to work. Even walking through these halls right now, I was like, wow, I haven't been able to work in almost 8 years, like what a gift to be able to go to work. So your perspective definitely changes. You see the beauty in the trees and the sky and the air, and you see a lot of beauty, and you don't take your loved ones for granted, and you don't take your friends for granted, and everything is, I perceive, as a gift. In the medical world, I would say I've definitely learned that we're all human. You know, and my doctors at the time made a huge mistake, and it was a collection of huge mistakes. It was over, a few people didn't catch the mistake, and I was resentful for a while, but I really didn't have time to get resentful, mm-hmm. be too resentful and stay there because I needed to save my life. So what I've learned is that had I not followed my intuition, that intuition inside of you, I believe, is God, and that's so powerful and so strong, mm-hmm. and we all have it within us. Your intuition is real and strong. It's hard to find doctors that give you hope, I would say, especially in the cancer world, especially having a diagnosis such as MBC, the statistics are not in your favor. There's not a lot of hope. So I believe that words are very powerful, and you giving me hope or saying that you believed in me when essentially I was sent home to pass re-sparked something inside of me that made me believe that I was capable of returning to health. And I feel like there's not too much of that in cancer land. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if we had a little more of that, I think we would see maybe a little more success rate and maybe more survival and more people believing in themselves. And I believe the mind response, or your body response to the mind, and your mind is very powerful, and we need doctors to believe in us just as much as we believe in ourselves.
I think it's such an important message. We run one of the country's largest training programs for doctors and for cancer doctors. And this is an important message. I had a beautiful patient about 3 years into my career who came from Connecticut, and her chart said, diagnosed with bone mets 11 years ago.
Wow.
And I said, oh, this must be a typo. And so I greeted her and I said, is this correct? And she says, oh, no, that's wrong. It was 15 years ago.
Wow.
And I said, well, tell me the story. And she said, well, my first doctor gave me 6 months to live.
Wow.
He died 7 months later. My next doctor gave me 2 years. He's also passed. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure I would be the best doctor to take care of you. But the truth is that breast cancer is a family of diseases.
Right.
And it's capable of change. It's capable of what we call Darwinian evolution, where what you start treating is not what you wind up treating. But we have to be humble enough to say, I might be wrong.
Right.
And I think what strikes me about your story is that the drugs you got were perfect for a HER2-positive breast cancer, but they should have been so much more effective.
Right.
Herceptin, Perjeta, TDM1, all of the drugs that you received should have had a better track record. But the system failed. The system said, oh no, we're right. We know what we're treating. We know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Even when it was failing. And I think we as doctors have to be more humble,
right,
and say, what am I missing here?
Right.
And I think partly that's where the Miami Breast Conference comes in, because it's a faculty of 30 people who are the absolute top of their field, but they're humble, empathetic, caring physicians, and I think they have a lot to offer our audience. So I want to say again how grateful I am that you'll be joining us in Miami and sharing your story and sharing your messages with our audience. Our audience is very large. They're very busy. We estimated 1 year that the attendees of Miami impact the lives of about 15%
wow,
of women with breast cancer in America today. And so I think there's a lot that you can offer them. This year, for the first time, with the sponsorship of Cure Magazine, we're having a patient track. So parallel to the meeting for the doctors will be a session for patients, which will cover a wide range of topics that patients face every day in their battle with breast cancer. And so we're very excited about that. We want to find ways to make the information exchange between the doctor and the patient closer and closer and closer. And I think this year's program with Cure is an enormous step in that direction. And so we'll look forward to seeing you there as well.
Thank you. I look forward to being a part of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information about Cure's patient-focused meeting at the Miami Breast Cancer Conference, visit curetoday.com and click on the scrolling banner at the top. Join us next week when we speak with Lisa Schlager from FORCE as she helps break down the flood of information available about genetic tests for cancer risk. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.